is voor mij, business executive, responsible for the police sector, with me Sureta, which is the senior manager, and she was also the signatory to the report. And therefore, she wants to thank you for the presentation. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Just before I start, just to quickly say that again, our reputation promise as the Auditor General is that through auditing, we strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. What I'm quickly going to go through today, the outline, is first of all, I'm just going to quickly touch on the requirements applicable and the process that was followed by CIRA with this lease building. Then I'm going to illustrate my process that I followed when I audited that lease building, what was management responses thereto, and then what was the conclusions made at the end of the day. If we look at the legislative requirements, especially in cases of an emergency or sole provider, because CIRA went the emergency route with this building, Treasury Regulation 16A 6.4 says that if in a specific case it is impractical to invite competitive bids, the accounting officer or accounting authority may procure the required goods or services by other means, provided that the reason for deviating from inviting competitive bids must be recorded and approved by the accounting officer or accounting authority. Now, the process that was followed was obviously that they decided to opt and use this emergency route, and then it was obviously approved by the accounting officer or accounting authority, and they then procured. What then happened is then there should have been a compliance with Practice Note 6 of 2007-8, which they then need to report within 10 days after the procurement, if it's above 1 million, to the National Treasury and to the AGSA. The relevant treasury then and the Auditor General will then consider the report and take the appropriate actions if and when necessary. Now, our appropriate action then that we took by the AGSA is then we evaluate the risk associated with this specific procurement, and if applicable or if the risk is high, we include this process or this tender in our form book. And that is what we did. So what we did is we obtained all the relevant information applicable to this lease contract, which included, but are not limited to, the engineer's report, management explanations. We obtained the round robin, that they called the round robin, that was provided to council for the approval of the procurement, and then obviously the lease contract. What we then did is we evaluated all this information. I also went further and did a technical consultation that was in-house within the AGSA. The only reason for that was that irregular expenditure is a very legal term. So you obviously want to sometimes just get that second opinion in the office to say, are we on the right track, if I can say it like that. And then we provided a finding, an audit finding to management for their formal responses. Okay. In short, the finding that we gave them was to say that the time frame in which the contract for Ecoglaze was procured does not indicate that the emergency deviation was appropriately used, because that's the compliance that we as the Auditor General really can look at. And we gave them the basic timeline of the event, which says that the engineer report date was in November 2010. The council's meeting was only on the 4th of February 2011. The resolution was took on the 8th of April, the contract was signed on the 15th of April, and they occupied the building on the 1st of August. So we said with these 9 months between November and August, obviously there was enough time to go through the proper procurement process. Now management gave us detail and a lot of management comments, but it basically boils down to which they said that although management received the engineer's report in December, or they only received it in December, although the date was November, and that we cannot consider the part between that date and the 4th of February as being part of the time to be able to procure, because the decision was not yet taken to actually procure a new building. That was the first argument. The second is that they said the period between the 15th of April and the 1st of August, the date of occupation, involved preparing the building for occupation, this site included the positioning of offices and setting up the IT infrastructure and telecommunication. So they also said, irrespective of which procurement process was followed, the same time frames would have applied. Now, also in the AGSA, what we did this year, there's a list of examples of irregular expenditure. Now,
can I ask you just to switch on your microphone again? There's some sort of disturbance on.
Okay, can you hear me? Yeah, it's fine. Okay, so what the AGSA do is, in consultation with National Treasury, the AGSA compiles a list of examples of deviations that can result in irregular expenditure. And that document is in a way used as a guideline within our office to determine if something is irregular or not. And we know that that process took very long because it was a legal process and a lot of legal people were involved. Now the deviation that we looked at applicable to CIRA was to say that the deviations from competitive bidding were approved on the basis of it being an emergency, even though immediate action was not necessary and or sufficient time was available for the bidding process. And to make it irregular, it says that it can be factually proven beyond reasonable doubt that immediate action was not necessary or there was sufficient time available for the bidding process. So this is the guide that we use to determine and evaluate now all this information. And I must be honest with you, it looks now short within a few slides, but it was really a very long process which we argued with management. It's not just black and white. So at the end of the day, with all these comments and meetings and discussions, we then said, okay, if we look at that engineer's report and we look at all the things that management did, we do understand the case of the emergency of the project. So in conclusion, we said, after we had meetings with management and the chairperson, that the emergency route was chosen, and in light of the fact that the AGSA accepted this emergency, CIRA then did comply. And also what, in a way, supported that was to say that National Treasury is the standard setter for recognition of irregular, and no indication of any concerns raised by National Treasury when CIRA reported the deviation, indicating that the implications will be $61 million. And they acknowledged that notification on the 1st of July. So the final conclusion was that as CIRA used the emergency route, and we cannot factually prove beyond reasonable doubt that immediate action was not necessary or there was sufficient time available for the bidding process, the lease of the building is not irregular and the finding was closed. So it was not included in the final management.
Members, any questions? Thank you very much for the presentation. Any questions? No questions. Mr. George?
Madam Chair, just clarity. You have tried to explain to us how this emergency deviation is allowed. And one of the things you said is that there must be no time, there must be no sufficient time. But in this case, you say also that there was sufficient time available for a bidding process. But what surprises me is also saying that the AGS accepted. Can you explain to me, because there seems to be to me a contradiction, and the bidding period process and sufficient time, but also the AGS accepting.
Ms. Koulibonat.
I think Honourable George has hit the nail on the head. There does seem to have been ample time to go to attend a process. And in this era where we've seen, and I was trying to check for the dates, but, you know, we've had irregular property deals come to light time and time again in the SAPs. and I would have thought that CIRA would have erred on the side of caution rather than go ahead with this. We're talking about an entity that has come before this portfolio committee year after year, time after time, and is basically very able to function. They have a whole schedule of things they want to do, but actually they're being sued here, left, right, and center. They can't function. They can't collect the millions and millions of rands worth of fees because they simply don't have the capacity. They're understaffed, and yet they've gone ahead with a building deal, which is dodgy enough to come before this portfolio committee. So I'm quite astounded that that it's been deemed to be acceptable. You say you couldn't find reason that it was not. I just think once again, to find ourselves dealing with another murky property deal is just a step too far for this committee. It really is. It's a step too far. Enough.
Any other questions? Okay, I've also got a couple of questions. I want to agree with what members have said in terms of the time frame, and you yourself have said in terms of the time frame. The time frame, the 9 months, you could have gone on a tender as well. And the argument of we would have in any case needed the 3 months to prepare the office is neither here nor there, because it would have been the same. The second thing is the escalating cost of this rental contract is a matter of serious concern to this committee. I think why we are taking an interest in this, the CIRA legislation is coming to this committee, the amendment bill is coming to this committee. And part of that bill is that CIRA wants to be funded by state. Now, this cut, with other words, it becomes the state's problem from here on onwards. I cannot believe that Treasury had no problems with this contract. The issue of the amount of space they rent, given the fact that the majority of the staff component are inspectors who are supposed to be out in the field doing inspections of private security industries, training authorities, etc. Thirdly, I can't believe that Treasury, the issue of the escalating cost, the issue of the number of staff versus the size of the building, the luxurious nature of the building, etc. Thirdly, the issue of the aircon, which they are paying over and above the rental amount per month. Does that not raise any questions with the Auditor General's office? I mean, can you say in all good faith to this committee that you've got no problem as the Auditor General's office to motivate the Treasury that if we should make CIRA a cost center of the state, that these contracts and CIRA's other obligations is not going to become an issue for the state, a liability for the state? Fourth question is the issue of the council meeting where this decision was taken. Did you at any point in time look at the council minutes in terms of the number of people present at the council meeting, number of council members present at the meeting, and whether in fact there was a quorum at the time of taking this decision? If there are no more questions from members, then I will hand over back to the Auditor General's office for answers.
First of all, if we look at the escalation cost, yes, it was also an issue for the Auditor General, obviously. But the problem, I would say the problem, let's call it maybe a regularity audit, we can only go to the compliance side of it. I mean, this was a management decision that was taken. They wanted the AAA rated building, all of those things. For me as an auditor, I could only look at, okay, well, did I actually at least comply? And that is now answering that question. question is, obviously we felt that unease, and that's why we gave them the finding, to say let's get management to actually give us proper management comments on why did they choose this building. Now, I don't know if the round robin that was provided to the council, in that document, they actually went and did a very lengthy need analysis. They looked at other buildings as well. So they had the detail of what other buildings they looked at and went to agencies. So they went a bit further. It wasn't just that they took this building first off and then decided upon it. There was a bit of, let's call it, a thinking process behind it. But at the end, we also asked them a lot of questions. But why AAA rating and all these questions? But at the end of the day, for me as an auditor to get back to, I can only look at the compliance side. If we start looking at the economical side, which I think is the issue, then we need to go more to, then you have to do a performance audit and go and see the root on economical. For me as regulator, even though I know they might have gone cheaper, I can't, out of an audit perspective, tell them, yes, you should have gone cheaper. Because for me, I only looked at the non-compliance side. What we did with the escalation cost is that we said at least they need to disclose it properly in their financial statement. So that escalation, they put in a note at least in the financial statement for the users to give them more information on the escalation. Sorry for the confusion on this slide. I think what I was trying to say is this was also an issue for us. That's why we gave them the finding. But we have to take everything into account. And I think that sentence which says that I have to factually proven beyond a reasonable doubt that they could have done it differently is very, very difficult. And I think based on the fact also, I think my final decision where I decided it's not irregular was at the last meeting. They provided me with this National Treasury document and said, but why if National Treasury is not giving them any concerns, how can the AGM come and say that it is irregular? So that's why I said this was a very lengthy process which we argued this fact the whole time. And at the end of the day, when I looked at this list of examples, I said, okay, I can't factually prove beyond reasonable doubt that it wasn't necessary to go on emergency. And if you read around Robin as well, they went to 5 agencies. Those agencies took them to a lot of buildings. Now, at the end of the day, they couldn't tell me why they decided Sierra. That's where there was this bit of a gray area. And also, if we look at the buildings that they compared to each other, it wasn't apples with apples. It was an A-rating building or a AAA-rated building. So, and then I asked them, but okay, can't you give me all those information that's supporting this round robin? But they couldn't, because the round robin was, at the end of the day, their document provided to council. And when that technical consultation that I did in the office is also to say that they didn't go the closed bidding route. They went the emergency route. So for me, at regularity, I can only review them on the emergency.
Sorry, no, I'll come back to members. You haven't answered all the questions. We asked whether you looked at the minutes of the council meeting, etc. So just finish answering the questions, then I'll give members an opportunity again.
I have to be honest. I can't remember. I think we did, but I won't be able to give you an answer now on the quorum. I will have to get that and confirm that in my file. I didn't check that. But I think we would have. We should have. That was part of our procedures that we would have looked at that. But I can't give you a confirmed answer right now.
The aircon?
You see, the problem again with the aircon is part of the big contract. So we looked at the big contract, the procurement of the big contract at the end of the day. So that was part of that contract at the end of the day. So again, it's going back to economical. I think there were so many questions that we've asked them as well, that based on economical, why did you do that? Why did it take 3 months to get the building right, etc. The installation cost, all of those things. But at the end of the day, it was a management decision that was taken. From an audit perspective, I don't really have a compliance foot to stand on. Tell them, but one and taken this contract. Again, we've also identified other irregular also in CIRA that they disclosed properly. So, yeah, to be honest with you, economical, we also doesn't have a very easy feeling with this lease contract. But from an order perspective, there's nothing, I could only look at the compliance issue at the end of the day.
Well, I hand over to Members again. Can you tell us then, if we want to find out whether this was an economically sensible decision, what do we do? Because can I tell you now that the move to this building cost 4.3 million rand?
You will need to request a performance audit, because they look at, is it economical, effective and efficient from the AGL.
Miss, if that's the route we've got to take, we will have to take a decision on that. Can I see if there are any other questions, Mr. George, Ms. Kulabarnat? Honourable George,
I ask this question, but if they are not unsatisfactory, I will understand, because I must be honest, I am not impressed at all. It shows that there's something going wrong in our country. I cannot understand, because I would like to understand, were you influenced, because you when you gave a certain management decision, and then you said decision of the national treasury. But I thought the auditor general is supposed to be an auditor general's office. It deals with issues independent of any. Now, if I'm now told that the decision of the auditor general, I mean, I influenced, I just want to know, so that I know what's happening in this country. That you management decision, but also emergency. Surely, if you use a certain term, in terms of laws, you normally have a definition. That's why when we make laws, once if a term is going to appear regularly in your law, you give a definition of that term. What's happening in financing? Don't you have a same definition of emergency that is Auditor General and National Treasury, everybody, so that it does not depend on the good day of that person, is it a good day in national emergency? Don't you have a definition of what is meant by an emergency?
Thank you. I'm quite astounded to look at what has been signed for in this contract. That the lessee, paying huge amounts, is still responsible for the carpeting, for the tiling, for the electricity points, for everything one would imagine for a AAA building, this would be provided. I mean, I agree with the air conditioning, but it goes a lot further than the air conditioning. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And on top of that, the lessor will now be appointing, has the right to withhold payments from the lessee if the workmanship that is now put in that they're paying for is by their standards substandard. I mean, it's just the most extraordinary contract I've ever seen. You take on this massive AAA building and then you have to spend a fortune to turn it into something that you believe will be good enough to work in. And I'm talking, let me say again, about an entity that is totally dysfunctional. It has thrown aside millions, millions and millions and millions because it doesn't have the ability to collect the fees due to it. Millions. 2 years ago...
Let's focus on the building, please. We will deal with CIRA on their performance when it's annual report.
Yeah, I really think this is one of the worst deals I've ever seen. I cannot, for the life of me, believe it, and I believe this committee should indeed ask for further investigation because it is appalling. Appalling.
Honourable mention.
Jefferson, I want to ask a general question, obviously that has to do with the building. Is it not the function of the Auditor General to save the state? When a department makes a decision on leasing a building, I mean, we have heard many times in the past that buildings that were too expensive, that did not match the fee, have have been signed because somebody was going to benefit someone. Now, even though management had agreed, and the National Treasury also maybe did not see a mistake in the deal, and you look at the price and what is being offered, is it not the responsibility of the Auditor General to say that this amount cannot be justified because something for this amount, something cheaper can be found rather than what is being offered or what has been signed? Is it not your responsibility? Thank you.
I'm going to hand over to you for final comments and then I will summarize.
To answer in a general term, remember the Auditor General, our audit opinion at the end of the day says, is the financial statement fairly presented? That is our goal. Okay. Now, if it becomes irregular expenditure is, I want to call it another ball game. Because it's such a legal term, they say that we as the Auditor General are actually not allowed to tell them it's irregular or not. It's actually another process that needs to be followed, and it must be the BAC or whoever that needs to decide if it's irregular. So I think that is why we went out of this point to say this list of examples that was in consultation with National Treasury. That's only based on irregular expenditure because, like I said, it's a legal term. If we get to all other things within the AGSA, there we take our own standards, we make sure all our things are done properly, and we give an opinion on the statements of the financial statements without taking any management comments or National Treasury decisions or anything. And that's based on us. I think it's just when it gets to irregular expenditure because, like I said in this other slide, is that National Treasury is actually the standard setter for the recognition of irregular expenditure. And that is why we took that into account to say, okay, with all this taken into account, the emergency route was then accepted.
Members, I'm going to summarize. Reverend Honourable Mesh, I'm going to summarize. I understand the Auditor General's office response as well. I'm not necessarily agreeing with what they're saying, but I understand it. Although I'm very tempted to ask, why did you do an irregular audit? But I will not do that. I'm going to summarize because I think that is members' feelings, is that this committee requests you to do a performance audit on this building. The acquisition of this building, the selling of the existing building, which belongs to CIRA, the sale of the existing building that belongs to CIRA, and also the cost, the total cost of moving to the new building. We were made to understand by CIRA that they also bought brand new furniture for every single office, and that came to a cost of about 4.3 million rand. Now, I think from this committee side, we definitely are then requesting that you do a performance audit on this building. If you need it in writing, we will provide it to you in writing. How long will that more or less take? Can you give us an indication?
Chairperson, we've got a separate performance audit unit. They work on their own time frames. I don't think it will at least between 3 to 6 months. That's usually the time turnaround time that they have.
We will ask you to also related in the sense of urgency because we need to pass legislation. We need to do so in an informed manner. At this stage, we're not doing so in an informed manner. So we're going to ask you, and we will put that in writing as well, that there is an urgency around this issue for the committee. Thank you very much for your availability. We appreciate the explanation. We will excuse the Auditor General's office and ask the Secretariat to set up their presentation. period, as I said last week to subs. We expect you to set up before the time. I'm going to give over to iPad. Let them continue. Captain iPad, you can continue, please. Where's Ms. Mbeki? She went out now. Can you just call them all back? iPad can... Oh, there's the secretariat now. Okay, you ready? That worry secretariat is now ready. Before I hand over to the Secretary of Police to introduce the team with her, I want to make it clear that to both IFIT and the Secretariat, I'm not going to repeat this when IFIT comes. Parliament's got an obligation to look at your quarterly expenditure every single quarter. Now, we've done so when we did the budget hearings. We looked at expenditure, but we have not done so for the fourth quarter and the first quarter of this year, so this financial year. Those expenditures are supposed to speak to every single program in your budget, and it's supposed to give us an indication of what percentage of the budget for each program you have spent in each quarter. Not a summary at the end of the year, we spent 99%. It is for this committee, in order to do proper oversight, we need to know that a department is spending 10%, 10%, and 10%, and suddenly 70% in the last quarter. Then we know we need to look at it closer, because it then becomes fiscal dumping. So we want you to focus, I've looked through the presentations as well, we want you to focus on what you are here for, both IPIT and the Secretariat, and that is the finance part of it. So the other stuff that you have, you can run through it, but we want you to focus on the financial stuff. I give over to the Secretary of Police, you can introduce your team.
Okay. On my right is Mr. Basson, who's in my office, responsible for strategic planning. On my left is Mr. Zemo from the partnership unit. Next second is Ms. Kawuji from the monitoring and evaluation unit. And behind is Betty from the HR, Mr. Sermon from corporate services, Sochi's Omar, head of policy and research, and Renier from Van Hayton, who's basically acting as the head of finance at the moment. Our CFO has just been appointed and will be starting work on Monday. So hopefully that will assist us going forward. If I look at the last quarter, and I'm going to go through the last quarter first of the financial year, and as the portfolio committee requested, I'm going to focus on slide 6. If you see in your slides the initial presentation that was sent to you, the operational costs were 3992. However, in the slide that's presented to you, it's 14206. The reason for the slight difference is that was what we requested from SAPS. However, SAPS gave us an additional amount that was not requested. And that was broken up in during that period into our personnel and training of 27,565,000 and operational costs of 14,206. One of the things that we have in basically, if one looks at the end of 2012-13. The Office of the Secretary had spent 100% of its budget. The Office of Corporate Service had spent 98%, and when we go back to the final quarter, we will explain that underspend. Partnership had spent 100% of their budget. Policy and Research had spent 100% of their budget. And Monitoring and Evaluation had spent 49%. So that was of the total annual budget for 13-12, and we'll go into detail with regard to the underspends. Then in the next slide, we've broken it down in...
We're not speaking from the same notes.
This slide is something that we added in because we didn't give the overall expenditure.
Give me the opportunity to finish. Even slide 6, our figures were different than yours. Even slide 6, our figures are different than yours.
Chair, I think I explained when we were dealing with slide 6. I said to you that the figures that we had put into the initial report sent to you was under operations, we had put in a figure of 13992, okay, and a total budget of 41556. That was what we had requested from SATS. When we asked for the allocation from SATS, we requested 13992 from SATS. However, they allocated us about of 14206, which we asked them to take back because we didn't require that additional costing from SATS. So that's why what we initially sent to you was the 13992, and the total amount was 1556. However, SATS in their allocation in the annual report have allocated an amount of 14206 to us. Which was money that we had not necessarily requested.
Hang on, please. Can I ask you then, if you're talking to a slide that we don't have, that you indicate categorically that we don't have
that
slide?
I will do that, Chair President. Slide 7 is basically the slide that deals with the spending in the final quarter, in January to March of 2012. And if you look at the Office of the Secretary and the overall spending trends, we spent, you'll see that in January, February and March, there was an amount spent, and we will go into detail on that. Corporate Services amount, Partnerships amount, Policy and Research's amount, and Monitoring and Evaluation. Now, you will notice that all of those, that the highest rate of expenditure was during the period of March, and we will explain that when we come to the individual program breakdowns. I'm not going to go into the purpose of the Office of the Secretary, but if you can move on to the next slide. The next slide, it deals with the budget allocation and the expenditure during January to March, the final quarter, with regard to the Office of the Secretary. What 57% of our budget was spent in the last quarter of that financial year. And the reasons for the spend, overspend in this quarter were that it was during that quarter, the Office of the Secretary also includes money that is used for strategic planning processes. And that strategic planning process took place in the final quarter of that financial year. The budget for legislation related to the enactment of the Civilian Secretariat for Police was spent in the last quarter. The Portfolio Committee would be aware that there was a visit undertaken to look at best practice in terms of forensics, and although that trip was undertaken in the third quarter, it was only billed by DIRCO to the Secretariat in the fourth quarter. And then the final reason is related to the restructuring of this office, where additional staff were brought into the Office of the Secretary of Police. If one goes on to the Chief Directorate Partnership and to the spending patterns of Partnership. Partnership had, by the end of that financial year spent 100% of their budget. However, the majority of that budget was spent in the first, second and third quarter of the year, and in the final quarter of the year, January to March, only 12% of the budget was spent. So the majority of that budget was spent in the first three quarters of the year as opposed to the last quarter. The explanation for the underspend was that the stock theft in the final quarter was that the stock theft strategy had been replaced with a macro rural safety strategy, which meant changes to the project planning, and that strategy had already been launched by the time the final quarter of the financial year had occurred. The CPF workshops to prepare CPF guidelines took place in the second and third quarter, and the final drafting of the document then took place in the fourth quarter. The CSF training program procurement was delayed. We had initially anticipated that training would be conducted by VITS. However, that VITS's training, there were procurement processes regarding that VITS training, and targets for public participation engagements were exceeded during the third quarter. If one then goes on to look at policy and research, the policy and research budget, if one looks at the allocation, policy and research, by the end of that financial year, just for the Portfolio Committee's information, it will be in the annual report that is submitted, but by the end of that financial year, the policy and research budget had spent 100% of its budget allocation. However, 52% of this was spent in the last quarter of the financial year. And the reason for the overspend in the last quarter was that there were budget funds spent on the legislative process, particularly in relation to preparations related to the DPCI legislation and roundtables held regarding the DPCI legislation. That budget funds were spent on the small business robbery strategy, and this project was transferred from the partnership unit. That we spent funds for a project that had not been in our APPs, however, which we were instructed to develop, which was the small business robbery strategy, and budget funds on fieldwork for basic training were spent during that period. Capacitating the policy unit started to really take effect in the third quarter of that financial year, and then there was procurement processes regarding the resource centre and purchase during that year of the book detection system for the resource centre, which process had actually started in the second quarter. But because of procurement processes and requirements, the actual funds were only paid over in the fourth quarter. Then if one looks at the monitoring and evaluation budget, the monitoring and evaluation budget by the end of this financial year had only spent 49% of its budget. So when one looks at the spending patterns for the final quarter, 13%, basically that was pretty even across all the quarters, but the final total spend on monitoring and evaluation was only 49% of the total budget. So this was one of the areas where the Secretariat, both in terms of their spending for that quarter as well as their spending for that year, was underspent. The main reason for the underspend was related to the allocation of the database. The 51% of the monitoring and evaluation budget was to be spent on the development of that database. And I think we have reported to the Portfolio Committee both during the annual report and during the previous year that we have had significant difficulties with regard to that database. At the beginning of last financial year, we had allocated $1.5 million that would be spent on that database, and CETA had committed to being able to implement that database. I think when we last reported to the Portfolio Committee, we made you aware that CETA had told us that basically it would take them 4 years before they would be able to have a working database functional. And we felt that 4 years for such a simple database was too excessive. we have now, we asked for the funds to be reallocated this year, and we have gone on an open tender process. We are currently at the stage of asking for of finalising the terms of reference, and the bid committee is going to be calling for tenders for that. So that accounted for the 51% underspent. But if one looks at the 13% that was spent, that was pretty similar across the different periods. If one looks at the final area, which was the corporate services only spent 79% of their total budget. You will see when we present the annual report. The two programs that were underspent during this financial year were the monitoring and evaluation program and corporate services. All the other programs within the secretariat spent 100% of their budgets. Corporate services also during that quarter spent 49% of its budget during the third quarter of that financial year. The reason for the spend during that financial year were advertisement for the bulk of posts for the new organogram. The new organogram was only signed off by the Minister of DPSA early in March, and we had already prepared the advertisements, and we advertised immediately that organogram was signed off. Training that took place in the third quarter was only paid for in the fourth quarter. So certain training that had taken place with Palema, which had taken place during the third quarter of the financial year, was only billed to the secretary in the fourth quarter. And then we were able to appoint some new staff during that period. However, the underspend for that financial year, as we will discuss with you during the annual report, the underspend for that financial year was largely as a result of the organogram of the secretariat, which was worked on by the Department of Public Service and ourselves, was finalised by our minister and signed off by our minister in November 2011. However, it then had to go through the DPSA and Treasury processes and was finally only signed off in March. So a lot of our understanding within the corporate service environment relates specifically to the fact that we actually had anticipated that our organisational structure would come into existence in January, and we would be able to start filling the posts in January. However, we ended up only being able to fill those posts in November. Chair, I don't know if you want me to go on to the second presentation or if you want to deal with the first presentation first.
Miss, I think let's deal with the fourth quarter first. Opening up for questions. Honourable Kula Barnard, Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Meshu, Honourable Mululeki George, and Honourable Mulebatsi.
Yeah, I must say I'm to a certain degree finding this presentation lacking because there are no specific details about each of the programs. Although I did hear you say, well, the other programs all spent 100%, but I think it's important for us to actually see which ones where it should have been laid out there. So perhaps in future that could be followed. Could you tell me what this so-called forensic trip was about that was taken by somebody in the secretariat, the reasons for that trip and how it relates to the trip this committee and SAP's members and others have already taken? I wouldn't like to think that anyone was duplicating something that we had already done. You've gone ahead and done certain technological improvements, perhaps, looking at replacing the stock theft strategy with another macro rural safety strategy plan project. I'm not sure. Is that just a project in the pipeline? Is it something that is being worked on? Is it something you think is going to be implemented? Because obviously, you know, stock theft is a huge issue. And I think the stock theft units that we visited are under-resourced massively, so they're supposed to be virtually irrelevant. So I'm very interested to hear about that. And I'm having lots of questions also from the community safety fora around the country about training. So I'm very interested to see what you've come up with, when it will be implemented. And yeah, while you're at it, perhaps you can fill us in on the status of the reservists, which is sitting for, I think, where are we now?
Members, I'm going to request again. I understand your eagerness to ask broad questions. Focus on the finances, please. These people are coming back to us in October for the annual report, and then you are more than welcome to ask all of these questions. But let's focus on the finances, please. I do not want to strike up the debate, but this is the purpose of this meeting. Otherwise, we are going to have the annual report that is irrelevant. Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if you look at the expenditure of the Office of the Secretary, as you said, 57% was spent in the last quarter, which of about 85 to 90% was spent in the month of March. Now, that looks like fiscal dumping, and I've heard what you said. Now, can I have a breakdown on the policy and the research? 52% were spent, but you didn't give us a breakdown of those 52%. Do we have also 90% spent in March? And the same with the corporate services. I'd like to have a breakdown for the last 3 months of the 49%. How much of that 49% was spent in each of the 3 months, please? Thank you.
Honourable Mission.
Chairperson, I need clarity on the overspending of budget funds on legislation processes. Now, as it is your mandate to have policy, how come that you overspend when it comes to legislation process? Can you just elaborate on that, please? And also, your purchasing of the book detention system. You say it was purchased in the third quarter, but payment was made in the last quarter. When you did the purchasing, was the payment not made? Why you purchased third quarter, but payment was only made in the last quarter? When you did the purchasing, was that purchasing not within your budget? I don't understand. Thank you.
Honourable George, and then Honourable Malabati.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. The Secretariat is overspending in the last quarter. You know, the reason why it's
Popik.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is a simple one on slide number 3. That talks about the understanding over the last 2 years, which was reduced significantly. My question is, how significant is significant? It was reduced by what percentage or how much? Because if you say significantly, it would mean different answers to different people. So I'm going to have a specific reduction there. Thanks.
I also have a couple of questions. I must be honest with the Secretary that your presentation is really not assisting us greatly in getting a picture. You know, if your expenditure January and March is 57% and then 52% in another program, then the immediate question that comes up in the minds of members, other than fiscal dumping, is what was spent in the other quarters and what were you guys doing other than sitting in offices? Because that becomes the issue. And we are going to request you to give us, going back, give us those expenditures per quarter. The other thing, a general comment, is that your presentation, and I would urge the Secretary to have a discussion with Treasury on how you're supposed to present in this quarter financial reports to us. Because you very selectively, in terms of certain sub-programs and certain programs, and that's unacceptable. It makes it impossible for us to do oversight. The Secretariat, the Office of the Secretary, is part of the administration program. So you focus on the sub-program in administration, but you don't give us a full picture of what is happening in administration. Then we can go to each of the other programs as well. Your presentation is not speaking to your programs as per your performance plans of that financial year, and that is just not acceptable. So we are going to ask you to correct that as well. I'm very worried. I hear what you say in terms of under expenditure and then over expenditure in the last quarter, but you know, it really worries us because this committee suffers as a result of the non-performance of the Secretariat. If you not produce legislation on time, this committee are then confronted with 3 or 4 pieces of legislation at a time, or it does not finish its legislative program. And therefore, I think the Honourable Molobati's question around legal capacity within the Secretariat becomes a very valid question. But we also said to the Secretariat last year that we are going to ask this year of the Secretariat to play your role, and that role is to be a civilian, not co-opted by the police, a civilian body that gives leadership in the police. We want you to critique certain things of the police, but we haven't seen that forthcoming. That we're going to talk about in the annual report as well. But now looking at finances, it becomes clear why we're not seeing it. You know, I wonder when we do our planning session for the annual report for the police, whether we can invite the Civilian Secretariat of Police and say, critique this annual report for us. Because that is in essence part of your job, it's part of your mandate, is to do things like that. And I'm worried whether we are going to be able. I mean, you've missed every single deadline in terms of legislation, every single one. It's so much so that the Secretary knew that I said to her, you bring us any more legislation this year, we will not be able to process them. We don't have time. There's just not enough sitting days left to do that. And there are legislation that must be before us. The issue around CITO, the monitoring and evaluation, I mean, monitoring and evaluation has been part of the program for a very, very long time. At what point in time did you realize that CITO is not going to be able to give you that? And why did it take so long then to go out and say we're going to go the tender process? I'm very worried about under expenditure, but I'm equally worried about the fact that 50% plus of your budget was spent in the last quarter. You are supposed to be spending 25% if you look at the policy and the research units, which in some slides showing as the police and the research unit, which makes me immediately really worried, it doesn't make sense. I understand you had problems and you had a change in leadership in that unit as well. But is it a question of the secretariat doing more things in-house than you thought you would do? Doing less things outside in terms of getting outside people to do some of the policy and the research development? I mean, because the civilian secretariat means that you don't have to do anything, everything in-house, but that you can get partners outside. I honestly believe you owe us a bit more of an explanation. What was the final spending of the monitoring and evaluation unit? 49, you said that. So you understand why we're concerned. And we do not have an idea of what is your administrative program, a full picture. And we need to have it per program. We're not having it. Which makes oversight for us basically impossible. I mean, I'm considering asking you guys to give us this presentation again when you come for the annual report. I must be honest, I don't know how members feel, because it's really making it impossible for us. And can I say to you, in your first quarter, there are contradictions in your figures. First quarter of this year, your figures are not making sense. They don't even add up. So there is a serious problem. Can you, on members, has raised me.
Okay, I'll deal with some questions and then ask other people to deal with the other questions. I think that the chairperson's point about meeting with Treasury, I mean, we're hoping that by Monday our CFO will be on board. And I think that the issue of meeting with Treasury to look at how these reports are presented is something which we take on board and that we will certainly do. And if you would like us to re-prepare those reports as part of the annual report, I think that would be extremely helpful. But I think that we recognise that the reports, having listened to what the portfolio committee has said, etc., that the reports need to entail more detail, and that we need to sit with National Treasury and look at how we present these reports. In terms of, and that also speaks to the lack of specific details. In terms of the program structure, I think the program structure may be a problem in terms of the second report that we've got that we need to go through with you for the first quarter of the new financial year. However, the program structure that we are presenting in this final quarter is a program structure that existed on our system. The issue of the administrative program, the legislative program, the different units, that only started this year. So during that last quarter, we were reporting according to those programs that appeared on our system, because we had not structured our finances into those systems. I think that we are well aware that if one looks at monitoring and evaluation, let me just speak to the different programs. If one looks at monitoring and evaluation, I think many will talk about the database. We've had a two-year grind around that database. The first year, they wanted us to appoint somebody without going through a tender process, and we refused to do that. At the end of that year, CETA committed us to the fact that they could develop this database in-house, and then towards the end of this financial year, it suddenly became clear from CETA that they could do it, but it would take them 4 years to just put in place a proof of concept, and we couldn't afford that. But Millie will talk to you about that. But that was solely the reason for the monitoring and evaluation underspend. But if one looks at the monitoring and evaluation spend, although it was only 13% in the last quarter, it was 13% of 49%. So more or less the monitoring and evaluation spending pattern, we're relatively okay, but I think we take what the chairperson and other members have said is that we need to break that down for members so they can see exactly when the rest of that was spent. With regard to the forensic visit that the honourable member asked about, it was a joint secretariat visit with the forensic laboratories being present, and it was linked to and it was linked specifically to a GH drug officials meeting that took place in Paris, and after that visit in Paris we used the opportunity to go and look at some of the French laboratories in terms of their training around DNA, and I think you could confirm this with Brigadier Chesi, who was with myself on that visit, but we picked up some very useful indications from the French with regard to how their training takes place, and even with regard to the cost-effective DNA kits that they have been implementing in France. But we also had to attend during that period an extended G8 dealing with drug trafficking. So we combined those two trips. The rural safety plan, I think we can discuss this in more detail during the annual report, but Mr. Zemel will inform you that the rural safety plan was launched last year and is already in place as we speak. The rural safety plan was launched at the beginning of the end of the third quarter. Well, we basically are.
Secretary, one moment. Please don't get sidetracked by members making side comments. Stick with the program. Mr. Groenewald knows that he can ask you these questions when we deal with the annual report.
Perfect. I think the CFS training. We were asked with regard to the CFS training. What we had done with Vince University with the postgraduate, we had developed a training program for CSS, which was a specific tailor-made course, which we had engaged with WITS in the development of that course. And basically the problem became related to the fact that it was a single supplier. Even though the secretariat had worked with WITS in the development of the actual course and no other university offered that course, there were still procurement problems related to it being a single supplier. The reason that we are now looking at going with regard to that WITS training course is instead of the secretariat paying the lump sum for that course, we're looking at the different participants paying per participant as opposed to paying a lump sum. So that is how we try to deal with the tender process around it, because it becomes very difficult because the course was developed specifically for us. And it carries with it basically an education certificate, which is equivalent to a diploma. So for us to now try and get other universities involved would delay that process. So we now are engaging with WITS about the way we handle that going forward, is that individual participants pay for the course as opposed to the secretary paying a lump sum for the course, and that will be for exactly what Ms. Colabana was talking about for the provinces in terms of the implementation of CSS, but it's a design course by the WITS postgraduate school that we have designed. With regard to I think that when we I'm not sure the portfolio committee would need to guide us, because they seem to be saying that we need to go back and look at more detail whether they want us to go through the spending for the first quarter of this financial year, or whether they want us to go back and look at how we structured that and present it with the annual report. But what we are finding is that our spending patterns in the new financial year are much more even. In fact, some of our programs have overspent in the first financial quarter, and that relates to them having to achieve their targets for the second and third quarter. And is because intensive work had to happen in that first quarter. So I think when one looks at our spending for the next financial year, it does show a more even breakdown across the board. I think we are well aware that that this report indicates that we spent a significant proportion of our budget in the last financial year, and that is something that we are trying to deal with. But I think one of the difficulties for us is that we basically have been gradually capacitating the Secretariat, and some of that process has taken time. The book processing system that the Honourable Member asked about that was spent in the final quarter, I think we were not saying that we purchased it in the second quarter. We started the procurement processes in the second quarter of the financial year. However, the procurement processes were only finalised and the system delivered in the fourth quarter, which means we made payment in the fourth quarter. So it isn't as if the system was delivered and then we waited until the fourth quarter to pay for it. We started that procurement process in the second quarter, and that process was only finalised in the fourth quarter when the system was delivered and payment was made for that system. And I think that system, just to give you some idea, that system accounted for basically of that money that was spent on policy and research during that period. That system accounted for nearly 200,000, so it was a significant percentage of the policy and legislation overspent. The question was asked about the legislation and the legislation person. We have advertised for the legislation posts. We have shortlisted and we have interviewed, and we were unable to find a suitable candidate during that process. So we are now in the process of headhunting for the head of the legislation unit. We have not appointed the other members to that legislation unit because we felt that the chief director should be appointed, and then we should look at the directors under them. So we are hoping that that process will be finalised. You know, we've gone from 53 to 110, and I'm not sure if members realise how long a process that has taken. I mean, my staff have been complaining that they spend almost 2 days a week just in interview panels, sitting on interview panels. We have now asked we have engaged the corporate services, but those are for very specific posts. Those are for posts related to corporate services, finance, supply chain management. We felt that posts in policy, research, legislation, etc., employment agency wouldn't necessarily understand what we were looking for. And we're hoping that by engaging the services of those people, because, I mean, for example, when we got the latest applications in corporate services, we had something like 100 applicants that met the criteria, that met all the criteria in the advertisement. Now, how do you decide who you're shortlisting from that 100? So I think that it's not only just legislation, it's other posts as well, corporate service, CFO, that we're only beginning to finalise those appointments now. I think we've noted the way in which we have presented, and need to look at that and sit down with Treasury and sit down with our new CFO in terms of making sure that we do these presentations differently in future and comply.
Aligned to the minister's priorities. And once that was finalized, it still had to go through the process of being authorized. Now, since we are a cost center under the CERT, it meant that after having been signed by the secretary, it still has to go through about 6 or 7 generals that had to authorize the tool. Now, this has been the same with all the steps that have been taken in terms of the development. For an example, once we then, after the tool was finalized, we then developed the terms of reference. Again, it went through the same process. The user requirements, same process. Now, the user requirements was even worse because that document took 5 months to go through the necessary steps within the SAPS to be finally authorized. And this for me is frustrating as I'm managing M&E in the Secretariat, in that we have to follow the procedures within the SAPS, and we often engage with them to try and minimize the delay. But in most instances, we find that we either don't get a response or they you know, process documents as when they basically see it fit. But then in November, we then went back, because we also then had an engagement with CETA, because we learned that there was a moratorium on filling of posts. And we wanted them to ensure that if they did continue with the development with them, they would then ensure that they have dedicated capacity to develop this system. But unfortunately, they couldn't ensure that. So by the end of December, early December, we basically realized that we can't proceed with the CETA process. And then in the last quarter, that is between January and March, we had to now go through the process of cancelling the development through CETA and initiated then the open tender process. Now again, we're still under SAPS. We still have to follow the processes within SAPS that take forever. And this has been the biggest frustration for me. Now we're in the process of setting up the bid adjudication committee, which still needs to comprise of SAPS members and ourselves, and we're struggling to get SAPS members to sit in the panel. It's an uphill, you know, and I think as soon as the tender is awarded, we will then be able to expedite this process because then we've given ourselves basically 3 months for the development and then the testing and deployment into the environment for another 2 months or so. So yeah, that's basically where we are.
Yeah, you know, members, I'm very tempted to say to the secretary that you complain about systems in SAPS. That's part of your role, is to make sure that those systems get sharpened. And unfortunately, you know, we've given you the legislation to become a designated department. It's a decision that you took to delay that process. So those two complaints about an internal struggle is really for us neither here nor there. I mean, we understand your problem, but it's really, we've given you the legislative power to do so. Secretary, before we go over to the next quarter, the first quarter of this financial year, I want you to answer me a question. If you can answer that question, we're going to continue with that presentation. If you cannot answer that question, there's no sense in it for us to continue with the presentation. Can you open up on slide 6 of the April to June presentation? Slide 6. You have slide 6 on the first quarter of this financial year presentation. If you take the amounts under the Office of the Secretary, it's 116 plus 312 plus 248. Then you go to slide 8.
Then you say it's 833. It's not. None of these slides are correct. And in fact, you are under the Secretary of Police, Office of the Secretary, you've only spent 21% of your budget, not 27%. Under the corporate services, it's 7%, not 19%. Partnerships, 15%, not 34%. And I can give you each of your slides that are contradicting. Policy and research, 13%, not 23%. Monitoring and evaluation, 8%, not 17%. Now, if you can explain to us the contradiction, then we can talk. If you say to us this has been a mistake, then I would suggest that we rather leave this presentation.
Chair, I would request that we present this presentation when we present the annual report. I think that we landed up putting this presentation together in quite a rush, and I think we need to look at it. I also think that some of the points that the chairperson has made about structuring the presentation into the correct program is needs to be looked at. So I would request, as I say, we've got a CFO starting on Monday. We will sit down with Treasury and look at how we structure this, and I would request that we don't go through this presentation, because I think those issues need to be addressed before we present to you.
Members, I am going to allow Secretariat not to present this presentation because it's going to be a waste of our time. But I must stress our absolute disgust in this, because, I mean, it's wasting our time. It's wasting finances from the Secretariat for people being here. Slide 6 contradicts slide 8. It contradicts slide 20. It contradicts slide 11. It contradicts slide 14. And it contradicts slide 17. None of those figures are correct, so the basis from which we're working is incorrect. It's no use that we continue with the meeting. Honourable, I want to finish this. No, but that's fine. The point is, are you at the right one? I'm talking about the first quarter, not the last quarter. But the point is, the slides that they're giving us here, the whoever did the calculations seriously wrong. But Secretary, that does not take away from the fact that, again, we are seeing that it's the same programs that are underspending. It's basically none of you are spending within the 25%. All of you are underspending. You mentioned when you talked about the fourth quarter that we will see in this presentation that's better than some that are overspending. None of them are overspending. Everyone is underspending. And corporate services is underspending seriously. Partnerships is underspending seriously. Almost half. 10%. Policy and research is underspending by 12%. Monitoring and evaluation is underspending by 17%. So that's a serious concern. It's what it raises questions, because that's why the committee wants to look at your fourth quarter spending, look at your first quarter spending, to see whether there's a trend in terms of underspending, and clearly there is a problem. Members, I'm not sure. I will look at our program. How are we going to handle this, Mr. George?
Thank you very much for your proposal. But I want to make a request to you, Madam Chair. This is becoming now a trend. The police do the same thing. They come here with wrong information. We have to say no, we'll come back. Can you do us a favor? Meet this department. Please with them. That the time we spend is very valuable time. When they come here, they must please come here prepared. Even if, Madam Chair, I think you must be fair to them. If they believe that they are not ready, I think we must allow them to ask you to extend the period rather than come here and spend time with this cover later than on. I'm just kidding. But I wanted to do the same last week with the police also not ready.
This department and the Secretariat knows me. I'm not pleading with anybody. We all got our obligation to do our work. And I'm not going to plead with it. There's a rule around this. We want acceptable quality presentations. I think it is, I think the shame is on you, not on us. The you know the seriousness of this. I don't have to stress it with you. Members, what I will do, because Mr. George, last week as well, the police were ready. They were part of that report. The fact that they came unprepared is a different story. But the fact of the matter is that I will write a letter from the committee side to all the heads of the different departments, IPIT, because IPIT, we also got problems in terms of your presentation. The secretariat and SAPS through the minister to notify him that we are not satisfied with the quality of presentations that we are receiving in the committee. It's really, I've indicated to you when we were talking about the fact that we really don't have one single day available in our program to do what we now need to do, to call you back to come and give us a proper fourth quarter and first quarter presentation. And it's a worry for us because next year you're a designated department. Then we expect of you to be fully run, to be able to give your own reports, financial reports, etc., completely. So it's worrying us as oversight body when we look at this. But, I mean, if I don't get upset, members know exactly how upset I am, actually am, because that's when I'm at my most dangerous, when I'm really not as calm as I am now. I really think it is unacceptable. They had enough time, Mr. George. The presentation was with us in time as well, a week before the time. They made a correction in terms of spelling. It's a pity they didn't make a correction in terms of adding up. That would have been more valuable. So we underline our absolute unappreciation for the presentation that we've received. We will make an arrangement. I don't want members to speak on this issue again. Please, I want to summarize and finalize, Mr.
No, sorry, Jefferson, it's important.
I'm summarizing, so can you then speak and so that I can finalize the issue?
We're talking about the times lost, Chairperson. We are wasting the taxpayers' money. How many officials have come down to this meeting and it's a taxpayers who's paying?
I think I made that point clear when I said, Mr. Groenewald, I'm chairing the meeting, so please. I have made that point very clear. In fact, I'm doing the utmost sanction that this committee can do is by writing a letter to the minister to indicate to the minister that we are not happy about the quality of presentations. I've made it clear that there was money wasted in preparing this presentation, in us being here, in bringing the officials down for this meeting. I've made it quite clear. And I think every single one of you sitting here knows exactly that there is no excuse for what is happening. So can we excuse the secretariat, break for tea for 15 minutes, and then we come back to start with IPIT. IPIT, you can set up in the meantime, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
going to do the same thing with IFIT now. It's on their fourth quarter expenditure and their first quarter expenditure. Please, again, I said it when we started with the Secretariat. I said I won't repeat it, but it seems that one needs to repeat it to officials. We do not want you to have cluster this briefing with a lot of other information. You will be coming to us for the annual report pretty soon. We want you to focus on the finances for the different programs, fourth quarter and first quarter. So if there are other slides, just run over them, please. You may start, introduce your team, Ms. Mbeki, please.
Thank you, Chair. Before I introduce the team, I would like to thank the portfolio committee for the opportunity for inviting us to come and present our budget and expenditure. The team that I'm with, from my left, chairperson is Ms. Shange, who's the program manager for Program 1, Corporate Services. And on my right is Ms. Lindo Gwele, the Chief Financial Officer. And over there, next to the computer, chairperson is Mr. Diane Sambo, who is currently acting as the PLO, because our PLO has just left us. And behind him is Mr. Lihulu, the acting head, provincial head for Western Cape. Behind me is Mr. Sisoko, the acting head for Program 2, which is investigation. And next to him is Mr. Dlamini, our spokesperson.
Before you start, I need to be fair to all other departments as we do that. This presentation was late, and you got notice at the same day than the Secretariat got notice of this presentation. These were on time. We need an explanation on why your presentation was late, because it simply means that members didn't have the opportunity to go through this presentation and to prepare properly for this meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I cannot dispute nor confirm the fact that the request was sent to us on time or earlier. But what I would like to say for this committee is that I would not have intentionally disregarded the request or instruction from the portfolio committee. It was not my intention to submit the presentation late. It is unfortunate that this time there was communication breakdown. I do not know whether the communication breakdown was between us and the office of the chairperson or amongst us as a department. And I acknowledge the fact that this should not have happened. And it is worth mentioning that we had a bit of instability in the organization in the past couple of weeks, both from a technical communication point of view and from management point of view. Technically, we were in a process of migrating our IT system from ICD to IP. Then what happened was that we were unable to communicate electronically with a lot of stakeholders. The problem was raised with FITA, and we discovered that during the transition or the migration from ICD to IP, information was getting blocked in the FITA gateway, and it was not then transmitted to IP. Which, as a result of that, we were not able to get any communication from outside, and we could also not send emails. I think the problem ran for plus minus 3 to 4 weeks. We have now finally resolved the problem, and we hope that this kind of miscommunication will not happen again.
I've asked the Secretary to get me the notice. I've also got it on my laptop here. You have received the invitation in time. So whether there was a communication breakdown in your office, it needs to be sorted out. And I would be interested in, if you know that you've got communication problems, and I know you have electronic communication problems because I was also trying to send you emails. But then you make another plan. Then you inform your stakeholders that we can't receive email. Please send us a fax. You just don't think nobody's going to want to know what's happening. I mean, we all know it's this time of the year when we are looking at these reports. Please continue with the presentation.
Based on on the guidance of the chairperson, I'll request that we skip some of the slides on our presentation, especially those that talk to priorities for the 2011-2012 financial year, as well as the 2012-13 financial year, and also skip the information or the slides that talk to performance information, as well as progress on implementation of the ICS, and just focus on the financials. Before I hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial information, it is worth mentioning that the presentation, the purpose of this briefing is to brief the portfolio committee on ICD's expenditure for the fourth quarter of 2011-2012, as well as briefing the portfolio committee on IPIT's expenditure for the first quarter of 2012-2013, and to present IPIT's contingency plan regarding the head office accommodation, because that is in accordance with the instruction or the brief that we received. The presentation will be taken, the CFO will take us through the presentation, and we will try to focus, or we'll focus mostly on the budget and expenditure per program, per economic classification, as well as indicating what we spent, what we should have spent, and whether there is over or under expenditure, and also indicate any variances on the presentation. And I'll request that we skip slide 2, slide 3, slide 4, and slide 5, and then hand over to the CFO to take us through the financials. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning to all the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee of Police. Today I'll be presenting to yourself, firstly, the fourth quarterly expenditure of the former ICD, and then I'll also take you through the first quarterly expenditure of IPED for the financial year ended 2012-13. In terms of ICD, the ICD received a budget allocation of 153 million rand for the 2011-12 financial year. This was a 19% increase from its budget in the previous financial year. And the split per program shows Program 1 receiving the second highest allocation of that budget, 73.4 million, followed by Program 2, which received 78.4 million. That was the highest allocation for the year 2011-2012. Program 3, on the other hand, received the smallest allocation of 1.6 million. This was due to the nature of the activities conducted in that program. But more importantly, slide 9, what was the fourth quarterly expenditure of ICD for the year ended 2011-12? The ICD spent 153.532 million of their budget allocation, which was 153.534 million. This equated to 99.9% of its final appropriation from Treasury, which means that there was under expenditure of 2,000 Rand, which was caused by the department. If you look historically at the fourth quarterly expenditure of the ICD in terms of trends, the ICD generally is known for underexpending over the past 3 years. In 2019, there was a significant underexpenditure of 10 million Rand. And as you may recall, it was due to the non-implementation of the ICD call center and the delays in relocation of the national office premises. And then in the 2010-11 financial year, there was under expenditure of 2.9 million. And one of the reasons were due to the delay in invoicing received by the department. But this year, we've worked considerably hard to try and reduce that under expenditure, but we still will make further efforts going forward to make sure that the department spends all of the budget that it has been appropriated in line with this budget vote. If you look at the detailed expenditure for the fourth quarter per program, Program 1 and Program 2 spent 99.9% of their budget, whereas Program 3 spent all of its budget allocations. The main reason for the under expenditure in the two programs was under the line item machinery and equipment. Maybe just to explain that in as simplistic terms as I can, when you procure equipment, there's equipment below 5,000, which is under goods and services, and equipment above 5,000, which goes under machinery and equipment. So when budget allocations were made, people assumed that their equipment, all of it, all the summary of equipment was greater than 5,000. So it was... It was budgeted for under machinery and equipment. But when the actual expenditure...
Hang on 1 second. Your slides are not speaking to our slides.
My apologies. I was meant to inform you, my apologies, that this is an additional slide in light of the comments made by the chairperson at the beginning of this meeting, where you wanted expenditure performance per program for each of the quarters.
No, but with due respect, even then, it is still not addressing what we said. What if we read that presentation as it is there now? You spent 99% of your budget in the fourth quarter. We need to know what per program that you spent in the fourth quarter. What percentage was spent in the fourth quarter? What percentage was spent in the first quarter? That is what the quarterly report is all about. It's that expenditure patterns that we need. And please, I mean, we're not clairvoyant. If you are going to have new slides in, then tell us that it's a slide that we don't have here, because we're all looking for the slide and we can't find it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have got subsequent additional slides which show expenditure for each quarter. So I'll be presenting to you the expenditure in each quarter per program with reasons for variances. And then in summary for the 2011-12 year, I'll present the final variance which were applied, so you can identify where did the savings or the under expenditure in each of the quarters, what was it used for at the end of the financial year during variance.
You know, there was a whole presentation by the Secretariat, there was a presentation by the Auditor General, plus we had a 15-minute break. Was it not possible for you guys to make us copies of those presentations in the meantime? Now, members are going to work from slides that does not exist in their presentations. And I phoned your office this morning through the Secretary to say this is the shortcoming in the presentation.
8 o'clock?
Just after 8. So, I mean, really, it's making it very difficult. Continue, please, but, I mean, you will have to make this presentation available to the members afterward.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me move to the other quarters and we'll come back to the fourth quarter in the end. During the first quarter, the ICD spent 19% of its final budget appropriation. The department should have spent 25% of its budget at that point in time. Program 1 spent 21%, Program 2 spent 19%, and Legal Services spent 15%. As you can see, throughout all the programs, the department was below the expected expenditure percentage at that point in time. The reasons which actually led to this under expenditure included the awaiting of the finalization of job evaluations for the new post so that people could be appointed, and the delays in the billing of computer services and GC's expenditure. In the second quarter, the department spent 41.7% of its final appropriated budget. The department should have spent 50% of its final appropriated budget. Program 1 spent 44%, Program 2 spent 42%, and Legal Services spent 29%. Of its final budget appropriation. Again, one of the main reasons there was the awaiting of the finalization of job evaluations. There was also delayed finalization of evaluations so that people could be allocated their pay progressions if they were entitled to them. And then we also had system problems in terms of the availability of our transversal system after we translated our IT software from Microsoft to Microsoft 7. We had problems with the suitability of our transversal systems with that upgrade, and that also led to the delays in capturing of payments in the second quarter. In the third quarter, ended December 2011, the department spent 61% of its final budget appropriation. The department should have spent 75%. Program 1 spent 62%, Program 2 spent 61%, and Program 3 spent 60%. Again, all the programs spent less than the expected expenditure of 75%. The under-expenditure was still attributed to the weighting of job evaluations, the finalization of performance evaluations, as well as the availability of the transversal system. There was also invoices received from public works which were disputed at that point in light of our national office accommodation, and therefore could not be processed during that quarter. Then at year end, going back to quarter four, the department spent 99% of its budget. There were violence at year end. The violence was a result of underspending in program two of anticipated underspending of 1.2 million. These funds were advised to program one and to program three. The percentages in each of those violence were 1.54 and 1.85 respectively, which translated to a final violence of 1.71%, which was within the legislative allowance of 8%. The funds which were vied to Program 1 were used to address the shortfalls in goods and services. So funds were vied or reprioritized from compensation of employees to goods and services. As you're aware, there were savings in compensation of employees due to the non-vacant posts and the awaiting of the finalization of the job evaluations as long as the performance evaluations. There was also pressure on goods and services due to the increase in office accommodation expenditure experienced during that financial year. Program 3, the violence was also applied to affect the shortfalls in goods and services. And that was, in summary, the fourth quarterly expenditure of the ICT. I'm not sure if you'd want to raise questions at this point or whether I can proceed with the first quarter of IBID.
Now, let's take a round of questions, then we can proceed to the fourth quarter. These slides must be made available immediately after the meeting, please. Members' questions. Honourable Kula Varnat?
Chair, as this is the first occasion that we've had the IBID here in front of us since the resignation of the CEO, I'd just like a comment from them on why it happened, what his exit interview said, and what is the process going forward. I gather we have an acting head now, so do we know when the next person will be appointed?
I think that's a question that we should put to the minister, with all due respect, because I don't think it's something that they handle. The appointment comes through the ministry. And the acting head is Ms. Mbeki, who is the legal officer of IPED. Any other questions? Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Molebatje, Honourable George.
Chairperson, if my question is out of order, it's all right, but I just want to know on your slide 13, you said there was a dispute on the invoices. What was the dispute? Or are we not going into that detail? All right.
Thanks, Chairperson. Attribute the underspending on slide 9. You attribute the underspending to non-implementation of, among others, the call center. How far are you now regarding the call center? Thank you.
Madam Chair, my question is one. If you look at the when they gave, no, we don't have it, expenditure in quarter one, there was a big gap in terms of underspending. Second quarter, also big gap. Third quarter, a big gap. Then now it means the bulk of their expenditure was in fourth quarter because they are left with only 2,000. That's exactly where my worry is. Where does this go? How did this happen? Can we be, because now we're interested in that last quarter where you underspend, then all of a sudden, what is it that happened in the last quarter which caused all the underspending which you have given the reasons for? What is it? Because that's important.
I also have a question, and mine similar to Mr. George's. I mean, he's focusing on the fact that you've basically what we would coin fiscal dumping in the last quarter, unless you can prove to us otherwise. But it raises a
bigger concern is that for 3 months you were not optimally, or for 3 quarters you were not optimally spending. So the immediate question to us is, you were not optimally doing your work either. And I'm worried about, if you just move on one slide, please, to 10, 11, not to get this side. For 9 months, your reason for under expenditure is the same. Awaiting of finalization of job evaluations for new posts as well as delays in whatever. Next one, 12, same story. Awaiting, go to 12. Attributed awaiting finalization of job evaluations for new posts. Go to 13. Attributed awaiting of the finalization of job evaluation. But then when you get to the fourth quarter, you tell us that is why you then moved funds to address those increases, etc. So for 9 months, there's been this waiting, waiting, waiting. How long does it take to finalize job evaluations? I mean, we were told that you guys were busy with that even after the legislation was passed. But the other concern is, again, and this is a repetitive problem with IMED. You complain that you do not have capacity. Over and over and over and over you complain you do not have capacity. Yet again, your program that underspent is investigations. That's where the variance come from. And that was now put into administration and into program fee. So you cannot come to this committee and say, we do not have resources. We cannot do our investigations properly if you are not spending where you are supposed to be, your focus should be, and that is on investigations. How do you explain that? Because every year, I think we can go back to every single one of this committee's reports on this. It has been underspending in investigations, but yet this is where I claim they do not have capacity.
Thank you. The first question regarding the dispute over the accommodation of invoices, we will be touching on this later on in our presentation, but this was the dispute over whether the department should pay structure rates or city forum rates for the lease expenditure. We were subsequently advised from Treasury that we should pay the structure rates, and that's what the department ended up paying in the fourth quarter once we got that final advice from Treasury. In terms of the non-implementation of the call center, the reason why the call center was not implemented was due to the decision by management when the new, or the former executive director joined the department, was that they realized that there will be now the establishment of the presidential hotlines and other avenues where they could receive inputs from. So they then abolished the project of the establishment of an ICD. Specific call center. Then in terms of the gap in the quarterly expenditure, and then how did we spend the money then in the fourth quarter, how did this happen? There I would acknowledge a current challenge that we are facing as the ICT in terms of ensuring even expenditure throughout the financial year. You find, for example, one of the main causes there was the delivery and the payment for your machine and equipment, including your IT equipment, is that people would place IT equipment in their procurement plans, but only initiate that process late, which means that there's a delay then in the delivery of the equipment, and it would only arrive in the fourth quarter. So you would see under expenditure, and then the expenditure which you expected according to your cash flows, for example, in the third quarter would only reflect in the fourth quarter. Other reasons there also were the finalization of the upgrade of our case management system. We had a lot of those invoices coming through at the end of the project, which was in the third and fourth quarter, which were material amounts also, which we thought would be appropriated throughout the financial year. So there is an issue of the timing of expenditure and actually initiating the expenditure processes that are in line with your procurement plans. And going forward, the department is regularly monitoring those plans. So if by the end of the second quarter you have not stuck to your commitments to the procurement plan and you don't have any foreseeable projects or reasons that you can provide that you will spend that money before the end of the financial year, that time, those funds will be reprioritized so that we don't have under expenditure due to late procurements as such. Then the concern over not optimally spending in the first quarter, yes, it is. is a huge concern. I think it is important to note that even though a department spends all its money at the end of the financial year, and they spend it so correctly, but you need to ensure your expenditure is phased out, that you don't leave things till the last minute, and that's still a problem, and we are currently addressing it. So now if we see that you are not spending, those funds will be taken away from you, because then your funds must go with your performance, and if you're not spending, then we'll also look at the performance of your components in light of that. The reason for... There was also a note on the concern over the delay in the job evaluations and the performance evaluations. This was a problem that we encountered in the previous financial year, and management was aware of it. But going forward, I know that they've implemented strict processes that need to be applied when you are doing those cycles. I think there was delays because people didn't understand the cycles and who needed to do what and when. So now there are clear processes in terms of how and timelines that are set for the evaluation of posts and the finalization of appointments. The target is to fill a post within 3 months of its vacancy going forward. Then under expenditure and investigations, again, that concern is noted and we are aware of it. And I think I'll also be speaking to it in my summarizing slides in terms of the controls we are implementing to ensure that people spend. We don't only look at your expenditure, but we also look at your performance. So if we see that you are underperforming in this quarter, you're also not spending your budget. If you don't have a plan, a detailed plan that can convince us that you have the ability to spend that money, those funds would be reprioritized. So I think the tone of management has changed in terms of accommodating under expenditure within the quarters.
Mr. George, Honourable George, one follow-up question.
I'm worried about this last answer. Is it investigation and information? Is the core of this department? I thought you would say now, this is what we've done. But you say now, I've taken notes. You see, if you look at what happened even yesterday, it's clear. This department is going to investigate a lot of things. Because the police, for whatever reason, are used to do wrong things. Whether for this or that, I don't know, that's not the issue. But I think with the amount work we're going to do, I think your answer does not satisfy us, especially on investigation. You see, this is one area where you should be spending more money, make sure that it is improved, make sure that it is ready for action. I would have been happy if we have allowed the person in charge of this to speak, that the person in charge of this investigation and information as to why there is no understanding.
Just before you ask your follow-up question, that's exactly what I wanted to suggest. It's wrong for this department to leave the financial officer to answer questions that's got specific to do with specific programs. And the Honourable George is quite correct. IFAN's core business, and this committee has been saying it to you for years, forever and ever. Over the last 15 years, I can assure you that this committee has said to you, you're not prioritizing what you should be prioritizing. Your administration program is still big, still second largest, and it's second largest by a million or so. It's really very, very little. Your core business is investigations. I mean, and we all have experience of IFID through our constituents not doing well in investigations, not doing properly in investigations. I mean, I've got a case that's with you guys, and you all know about it. I'm not going to raise it here. You all know about it. And I still haven't got a final answer. It's been 3 months. And it's a serious allegation. 3 months. It's ridiculous. What happens to your 28 days? It's a pie in the sky. Or you get to the Western Cape where somebody phones you. I mean, I don't even want to talk about my case from the Western Cape that's outstanding for 5 years. But you get to somebody phones you from a station in the Western Cape. You start looking at the case, and all the investigating officer
this is read through the docket of SAPS. I said, no, we agree with the docket of SAPS. It's been suicide. But this so-called suicide person is so short that that person couldn't reach the bars in the cell. Impossible for that person to reach the bars. Impossible. Nobody else in the cell. So that is our concern, is that the program where you are supposed to be spending, the program where we want to see results, we're not seeing results. And now you come and tell us that that's the program where you've under-expenditure yet again. I will, the next time any of these members from the opposition stand up in the house and say that IPED is under-resourced, I will take them to task personally. Because you're not using the money that you are getting for investigations. You're not using it. Why must we give you more money if you're not even using what you have? Can we get an explanation why investigations are still under-expenditure after how many years have ICD been in place? 2002? Even before then, I think. Always. Same story. Can we get an answer on that, please?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. During the financial year 2011-2012, there was a post of director investigation which had to go through the process of job evaluation. The post was never filled during that financial year. There was also a project for the ICD training manual, and there was supposed to be a tender which was supposed to go out for the development and training based on that manual, and this never happened. However, during the last quarter of the financial year, it's only then that the tender went through, and there was a partly an expenditure on that training manual, which in this current financial year we still continue with the payment of that training manual as well as the training associated with that. The posts that were vacant have now been filled in this current financial year now. So the most of the underspending actually happened at head office, at program two head office, and not necessarily at where the operations are happening. Thank you.
I hope you're going to remember that explanation, because when we come back to the annual report, we will further interrogate this issue, because it really is an unacceptable explanation. We've talked before about the fact that the majority of the expenditure for Program 2 also, or too big a portion for Program 2, lies with national office. It should be in the provinces. Program 2's expenditure should be in the provinces. It shouldn't be at head office. Can you continue with the first quarter of this year presentation? And please do it per program, because your presentation is not doing it per program.
Okay,
to ask whether we've got this presentation or not.
Thank you. Those slides, you do have them. They were previously slide 11 on the presentation that you have. I have, however, added an additional slide where I evaluate the first quarter expenditure per program. Just as a background, for the 2012-13 financial year, the department received $196.9 million. This was a 28% increase in the budget allocation in line with supporting the department with the implementation of the IPED Act. If you look at the split per program, Program 1 receives $92.8 million, Program 2 receives $98.7 million,
and Program 3 receives 5.3 of the allocations. Again, Program 2 has the highest budget allocations, closely followed by Program 1 and then lastly Program 3. The split economic classification shows goods and services and compensation receiving the majority of the budget. There's also budget under transfers and under machinery and equipment, which is capital assets. The increase per program shows Program 1's budget increasing by 26.4% versus Program 2 budget increasing by 25.9%. Program 3 budget, however, has also increased. It's increased by 231% from 1.6 million. And that's due to then the full capacitating of that new component, legal services. Then the first quarterly expenditure, the department spent 32.8 million of its budget allocation of 196.9 million. This equates to 17% of its actual budget appropriation. The department should have spent 25%. And if you do a quick glance, looking back, in the first quarter of 2010-11, we spent 17% of our budget, 2011-12, 19% of our budget, and 2012-13, 17% of our budget appropriation. One of the huge contributors to under-expenditure in the first quarter was, unfortunately, the delay in capturing of payments. The department had to implement the change in its budget structure from the previous ICD budget structure to the IPET budget structure. That budget structure was approved by Treasury during the 2011-12 financial year, and during the April, CETA then did the upgrading of the structure reflected on our transversal system to be in line with the new approved budget structure, which is also in line with the approved organogram of the organization. Unfortunately, there were delays in that process of updating our system. As a result, we did not have access to that system for the majority of April. We did, however, receive access at the end of April, which means that there was a backlog of payments which had not been captured or were captured at the end of April. This also led to some payments, unfortunately, exceeding 30 days, and as you're aware, that is of huge concern to any member of the government, because that has a huge direct impact on the businesses of our suppliers. The department did, however, do all they could to address the backlog in this. They worked hard to ensure that all backlog of captured payments were captured and processed throughout the remainder of the quarter. We also have capturing off-site at CETA to ensure that we don't have any disturbances due to disconnectivity from the transversal system. So we actually go to CETA and ensure that we capture directly there so that payments are processed quickly and efficiently. If you look at the expenditure per program, Program 1 spends 16% of its budget, it should have spent 25%. Program 2 spends 18%, it should have spent 25%. And Program 3 spends 10%, it should have spent 25%, which gives that 17% expenditure of the department instead of 25%. I've also given, on the subsequent side, an extrapolation of that expenditure for the subsequent 2 months, just so that you know roughly where we are to date. In July, we spent 22% of our budget, we should have spent 33%. In August, we spent 32% of our budget, we should have spent 41%. So, in summary, this means that there is still a huge concern with regards to under-expenditure of the department to date. That is why we are trying to address issues in terms of system connectivity. We go directly to CETA to capture. In terms of your delay in expenditure, we've got monthly tracking and reprioritization of funds if you are not spending according to your cash flow projections and your procurement plans. So that's in summary what the department is doing to ensure that this under-expenditure tendency is eradicated from IPED. Thank you. I'll now hand over to the subsequent presenters.
I'm first going to take questions on this first quarter of this financial year. I mean, can I start off? Again, the concern is, look at the investigation. Can you bring that slide up? Because
because we don't have it. 7% underspent. Now, goods and services surely doesn't play that big a role in there. Administration, 16%, you've explained why, but it also talks to planning, that you have a transfer of systems in your end of a financial year, beginning of a new financial year. I mean, it speaks to planning. It speaks about having the ability to have a system running while the other system has been set up. I mean, I really don't understand all of that. Legal services. One of the issues you said in the fourth quarter for the huge expenditure in legal services was the establishment and the capacitating that program. Why then the under expenditure when we get to the first quarter of this financial year? I don't know, members, you must ask your questions. Mr. Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have the slide here, but I think there are a couple of slides you've shown where it says it's an increase in personnel expenditure, I think.
The slide that Mr. Groenewald is speaking
about. Well, I was actually waiting for it to finish because it didn't deal with what I'm asking. Now, I just want to know, I suppose that the increase was due to the fact that there were more employees employed. Can we have a figure of seeing in the capacity building that increase in personnel expenditure? What was it exactly? Thanks.
Honorable George?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to try to compare what this presentation says and what Mr. Sissoko did, because he said when we asked about the investigation, he said the matter was solved in the first quarter of this year, where he said the people were employed and all that thing. When, because now, as far as this is concerned, we've still got a huge underspending. That tally was what he said.
Any other questions, members? Can you answer those questions, please?
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. The underspending on compensation of employees is due to the fact that we still have positions that are still vacant for the provincial head, as well as another contributor was the fact that we had created a capacity in the executive director's office, and also we have also created the capacity for corporate governance for the department, of which it was very important.
Follow, Mr. George.
Can I plead with the presenters to not to learn, for I know they interact so much with politicians, so they might start answering like politicians. If you are saying, like you say, you see, for us to be interested, because we have had this thing in provinces that up to now, provincial heads have not been employed. What is the reason? You give that as if it's something which you must be proud of, it's something which it must be accepted. What is it? Why? I mean, how do you expect these provinces to do the job if you are not employing provincial heads? I did want to comment, Madam Chair, even here, it's too many, of course, it's a culture of this department, I think. Number of people acting. You can't run a department with people acting.
Thank you, Jen. My question was not about the underspending. My question was there was an increase, if you can get the slide. I think it was a 30% increase or something like that of the compensation. So what I'm asking is how many new employees that you employ in this period, because there was an increase besides the understanding. 10% increase in your salaries. I want to know, in this period, on that specific item, how many new people that you employ? Because that is very essential to know whether you have people to do the job. Now, when were they? It was supposed to be in the first quarter. When was it?
If I can answer that question, where, if you have employed people in that time, in what program were they employed?
Honourable members, I think it will be fair for us to be honest on some of the problems that we have with our budgeting for the first quarter. I discovered that there is a problem with our pattern of spending when I started acting, and what I then did was to set up a task team to just revisit the figures. They are still currently doing what they call personal cleanup. What we discovered is that when the allocations were finally done, more money was set aside for goods and services as opposed to it being set aside for compensation of employees. As a result, at some point, we had thought that we do not have sufficient funds to fund the positions that we have on our establishment. And they assured me that by tomorrow they'll be having an indication of exactly how much money we have that we still have to make sure that the positions that we have is 337 positions that we have on our establishment. We have not been able to 337. What we discovered some time back, a few months back, was that it's possible that some of those positions are not funded. We therefore could not advertise them. But now with this cleanup, we discovered that all of them are funded, and we therefore have to make sure that we fast track the filling of those positions. So the problem was mainly based on us misallocating funds and not necessarily investing them where they are supposed to be. And we hope that, I'm not too sure of the vacancy rate, Ms. Shange will talk to that. On the, yes, the vacancies, the high vacancy rate in the establishment is true. The filling of provincial heads, the submission was submitted by the former executive director to the minister for those positions to be filled. We did indeed have a high staff turnover in the past 2 months, and that also created vacancies in the system, which explains why we can't spend most of the money that we are supposed to be spending. I will then now hand over to Ms. Shanda just to take us through exactly what the figures are in terms of the positions that we have and the vacancy rate.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Currently, we are sitting at a 13.5% vacancy rate. Most of these positions, it's the provincial heads, and in per province, you will find that it's one person or it's two people and so on. It's not that bad in provincial offices if you exclude the provincial heads because they fall under Program 1 according to our budget structure. So we are sitting at 13.5%, but we are more than the actual number. It's 40 something. I cannot remember the actual figure. At the last meeting that we had, executive committee meeting that we had, the national office was about 42 or 43. I can't remember the exact number, but I remember the percentage was 13.5%. Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask, can we please get a breakdown in each department of how many people there? I think the investigation team must have about 98% of the people. We're not going to get the figures now, but can they please present it to the committee that it can be distributed to the members, please?
Sure, it forms part of the annual report, so you can simply take that page out and submit it to the members in terms of how many personnel per program and how many vacancies per program and on what level. Because if you say the majority is in province, one or two in province, then you're talking about the provincial heads, which means the other 40-something or 30-something is in a national office. Then it comes back to this issue, why is national office so big if it's not in province? Are you done?
Thank you. Just to address the
regarding expenditure. Why was there under expenditure in legal services and other programs? At this point in time, there are still some journals that need to be passed for your overheads. These are amounts that are paid under, for example, Program 2 IT, and then you journalize into the subsequent program. So some of those journals have not been finalized, which is why it would appear as though other programs are underperforming, but it may not be a true reflection of actual under-expenditure. It's really under-expenditure of the department as a whole. So we paid some of our suppliers and, for example, your IT costs, but they have not yet been journalized to the cost centers, which are under Program 3 or Program 2. Then the translation to BAS, I think going forward, then we just need to make sure that if any transition could lead to periods of non-activity, then we have backup plans to ensure that we can still process our payments manually so that people get paid on time. In terms of the reasons for under-expenditure, the funds, there are currently 337 funded posts. They have always been funded and reflected as such in our strategic documents. I think we will then present to you the breakdown, the program, and the status of the vacancies. But to date, IPED has posted 337 posts to capacity the department, I think, just so that you have some sort of representation of the size of the organization. Thank you.
Any other questions that are still outstanding? Any further comments from IPED before we go over to your contingency plan for the lease?
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to confirm what Honourable Member Pune about the posting program 2 that we implemented at the beginning of the financial year. As we had reported earlier, that we're going to translate our case analysts in the provinces into investigators, and that is something that we did in the beginning of the financial year in April. So the case analyst as well as the monitors were translated into investigators at level 7 and level 8 respectively. It was a total of about 61 employees that were affected by that process.
He's giving the same answer which he gave. He really gave out the last quarter. The reason was that there were problems. He said, but he's immediately the first quarter, which we are talking about, you said that was rectified, but you still find under expenditure, which is huge. And that's why, where is the problem? Now, I thought you said in your explanation you have rectified. You gave reasons why you could not do it in the last financial year, but you said in the first quarter you dealt with it, but you still got expenditure. That's why I was asking, where now is the problem?
Can you answer the question?
Chairperson, I think some of the reasons are the reasons that were explained by Ms. Mbeki, because part of the process that we said to engage in was to get more investigators in, but because of this issue of the budget allocation, we were not able to employ more investigators. And as she has indicated that from tomorrow we'll be getting the right figures and possibilities that will be advertising more calls for investigators, and that will increase the spending in that program.
The CFO said categorically that there's always been 337 funded posts, and that's what you've been reporting to us year in and year out as well. So I find this explanation of not knowing which ones are financed and which ones are not funded, I find very, very alarming. You're not that big an organization that there should be confusion around which one of the posts are funded and which ones are not funded. I really find it alarming. If you guys can't give us a clear explanation on this, I would suggest that you give it to us in writing. Explanation in writing on this issue, together with the breakdown of the staff, vacancies, etc., etc., levels at which the vacancies is. Don't give us post level 10. Tell us it's an investigator, it's a chief investigator, whatever it is. Don't give us post levels. Tell us what it is. But I must be honest, I put in summary on this issue that our concerns remain the same. Exactly the same.
year in, year out. And you back actually 2 years. Last year, at least, you were spending at 19%, which is still under-expending. Now you're at 17%. I mean, it's worrisome. And you were the one saying, we can't implement this legislation unless we get the money. You got a 28% increase. But you're not able to spend your money. And I'm not talking about wasting money. I'm talking about spending the money the way it's supposed to be spending. And that's, in our minds, unless you can prove to us otherwise, should be with the investigators. Can we request that detail that we want reach us, it's Tuesday, reach us by Friday, please, before end of business, in writing. Can we go to the last point on the agenda, and that is your contingency plan since your contract has been cancelled for the building?
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, just to make sure that we are all singing from the same hymn book, I would like to just give a brief background on what's happening between us and DPW. There are two sets of contracts. One is the contract between DPW and Majestic, which is the lease agreement. Then there is a service level agreement that has been entered into by ICD and DPW. So as things stand, we do not have, as ICD or IPED, we do not have a contractual relationship with Majestic as the landlord. And we are therefore not party to the lease agreement that DPW has entered into with Majestic. And as I've indicated, the lease agreement is between DPW and Majestic 50. IPED is more of a sub-lessee to the property based on the service level agreement that we have with DPW. The relationship between us and DPW is solely based on the service level agreement. We therefore do not have any direct relationship with the landlord, Majestic. What then happened on the 1st of June this year, we served a notice to DPW indicating to them that in terms of the service level agreement, we have to give them 18-month notice of our intention to vacate the building. The question that they raised was then what do we do with the lease agreement? Because they've entered into a lease agreement of 10 years from 2008 with the landlord. And we had indicated to them that we are unable to afford the current lease amount that they are supposed to be paying, because now they are paying the difference, because we are only paying the structural rates. We are not paying the rates that they are supposed to be paying for 114 Vermeulen based on the lease agreement. And then we continue to engage with them, and the understanding was that they will try and find alternative accommodation for us, which suits our needs and financial commitments or arrangements. So as to whether the lease agreement has been or will be terminated, we do not know. All we know is that we have indicated to them that we want to vacate the building. They can find another government department to occupy the building if there is any, but we are unable to. One, we are not using all the space that is there, so the space is underutilized, and we are unable to afford to pay the rent. And that is where we left the discussion. We are not so sure of the findings of the SIU on the building. That was communicated to DPW. And as I've indicated, they don't owe us any explanation because we are not party to the lease agreement that has been entered into. With regard to the other accommodation needs, I would now hand over to Ms. Shang just to take us through what is in slides 25 and 26.
I don't think we must confuse the issue. The issue was about the head office. And what upsets me as I'm sitting here is that when you entered into this lease agreement, members were asking you, why are you going into this agreement? Do you have money for it? It's too big. All those questions we raised at that point in time. Now you come again. Now you say to DPW, and And this thing about you being a subleaser of DPW is also not acceptable. It's quite clear, and I mean, we raised that issue previously as well. DPW is the agent. You don't sign unless you are satisfied with what the agent is providing you. And we put those questions to you, to the executive director, the previous executive director, when you were here in front of this committee regarding this building issue. We put all of these questions. We said, why are you going for more space than you need? There were more parking spaces than you need. The size of the building, I think, is twice what you were looking for. Why are you doing that? Now you come and you say, well, we've now given DPW notice that we actually want to move from this building, and we're giving them the 18 months notice. It costs money to move. It costs money to move from Structura into this building. And in the end, it's a waste of money that IPAC does not have to spend. You do not have the luxury to waste money. You do not have the right to waste money because it's not your money. It's money that we must look after on behalf of the taxpayers. This thing, I don't know, members, you've got to ask questions, but there's clearly a big issue here. And I'm honest with you, we do not accept, and we said it that time and we're saying it again, that the department can simply say, it's not us, it's DPW. It's not us, it's DPW. There are rules around these things. You sign off as a department to say, we have the money for this amount. We are willing to pay for this amount. That is what the rules say. And not at gunpoint. Quite correct, Ms. Malavazzi. Not at gunpoint. Members' questions? Halt.
Chairperson, maybe I'm a bit forward, but I suppose the needs assessment, or let me put it this way. You gave notice. It's an 18-month notice. You must have a needs assessment, what you want. Is that finalized? Because the way I know the process, you're going to wait about 2 years. So after 18 months, you're going to be on the street. Can we get that needs assessment from you, please, in writing, so that the committee can also make their own judgment whether your needs assessment is really according to your needs? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable George.
Yes, Chair, I would just like you, I must be honest, I'm shattered by this. You know, some of the things that happen really makes you wonder what's happening. This is the matter we discussed, I don't know how many years, but not last year. We ask questions to these people, we try to advise them. Now, 18 months, 24 months down the line, we were brought the same problem. And that's why some of us now don't understand what to say. We are given the same responses, all these things we said. And we said, exactly as you are saying, said this excuse that is very common, of course, even with the police, you know, the Department of Public Works, it's your money. It's not the money of public works. So Department of Public Works can't do something if you don't put your signature on it. It provides, but at the end of the day, you have the final say. And that's why, Madam Chair, I must be honest, I don't know what to ask. I don't know what to say. Probably the best thing some of us, Reverend Mesha is not here. We could probably pray for them. That's the only thing we can do for them now.
Are there any further questions? Questions?
I just wanted to know if they're in or prior to an entity such as yours signing off on a contract such as this one, is there any oversight at all over such a contract? Is there a team within Public Works that perhaps looks through the contract in relation to your budget? I absolutely, of course, like the rest, cannot understand why you would get yourselves, I mean, you knew what your budget was, why you would get yourselves into a situation where you can't pay your rent. I mean, I've heard about Public Works forgetting to pay rent, but never heard of someone signing a contract for rentals that they actually knew they couldn't pay. It's quite extraordinary.
I don't know whether we're going to get the answers from these people. Now, the problem is also that the people that signed the contract are no longer with them. You know, I think the previous meeting where we discussed this issue was in the same room, if I'm not mistaken. It was in this very same room. At some point, I advised the CFO to stop answering questions on this issue because it wasn't her issue. It wasn't her issue. She just wanted to say whether we've got the budget or we don't have the budget. But it's a serious concern. You're now going to spend money again on moving, eventually, whether it's 18 months from now or whether it's 2 years from now. And what you're basically telling us is there is actually no contingency plan. And you still got the issue of you paying fractura rates. So at some point you're going to have to pay, either pay the difference or DPW is going to pay the difference. Nonetheless, it's still taxpayers' money. And what upsets me is that when we were asking these questions at that time, we were treated, well, I put, with contempt. Like we don't know what we're talking about. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think what we need to do is, we indicated that we need a meeting with SAPS and DPW jointly on the building issue. I would suggest that rather than try and pursue this issue here further, that we also at that meeting discuss, I mean, the CFO and the acting head can join us in that meeting, discuss with DPW this contract as well at that point in time, because I don't think they're going to be able to give us all the answers to this issue. Honourable Groenewald?
Jefferson, I will support your suggestion, but can we please also get the needs assessment before the time, so that we as committee members have the knowledge what the needs are really. And if DPW or whoever tells us that this is the building, this is how big it is, then we can correlate it with the needs assessment, please.
We will certainly do that. Ironically, though, they also had need assessments for the previous or the current building. And when DPW came and said that we're giving you a building twice the size that you want, at twice the cost, we signed off on it. Okay. Any closing remarks from your side before we close the meeting?
Thanks, Chair. On the lease agreement, in my engagement with DPW and reading through the papers, Chair, I discovered that a lot of things went wrong. During the negotiation of the contract, up to the time when the two sets of contracts were signed off. And I think the question as to whether do we have any say before a contract is signed, the answer is yes. But as to how it was done, I would not be able to answer. And what we have decided now was to say we need to partner with DPW. DPW cannot dictate to us on the type of accommodation that we should be getting, because we know our needs and we know what we want. I do not think that happened in the past. We just allowed DPW to go ahead and look for accommodation for us. And what I discovered when I read the documents, I discovered that the contract, the lease agreement, was entered into long before the engagements between DPW and ICD started. The lease agreement, according to the papers, was entered into by DPW for the Department of Human Settlements. When the Department of Human Settlements turned them down, then they went through their list and checked who is the next client that is looking for accommodation. And then they came to ICD IP. And probably what then happened, there was no thorough engagement between from the side of ICD on the actual lease agreement, because there is nothing that prevented ICD from amending the contract to make sure that it talks to their needs and making sure that they force DPW to look for accommodation that is suitable for us. And it is unfortunate that it's only now that we decided let's take a stance and make sure that we protect the funds that we have and not pay more for something that we do not necessarily need. And with regard to the issue of providing a needs assessment, I will make sure that we'll provide, but I just need to check with Ms. Shanga whether it has already been submitted to DPW.
Thank you. We did the needs analysis for the national office, which took into account the future growth for up to 2015. The needs have gone through the accommodation committee that has endorsed that based on the approved structure. It's still with us. It's going to go to DPW. Once it's gone to DPW, they will then send out the procurement instruction where they would want us to confirm availability of funds and also the tenant installation, because we would have to get the accommodation and make it suitable for our needs, as well as the chairperson has indicated that it costs even to make those refurbishments on the buildings that we would be acquiring. The needs currently that we, based on the future code up to 2015, is 3,020 square meters that we are requesting, but it's based on the approved structure at 2015, because we are avoiding the situation where we are accommodating current needs. Next year we are planning to grow, and the following year we're planning to grow, and we'll have to move and move and move. So that's where we base our needs on.
Yeah, national office is not supposed to be growing to such an extent. So we will be very interested in that need analysis, because it will also indicate to this committee whether you are actually focusing your growth at the national office rather than at provincial level. Ms. Mbeki, can I just say to you that at the time when we engaged on this issue, it was known to all of us and to management that that building was first offered to Human Settlement. It's not news to us. You knew, it might be news to you, but that was part of the discussions at that point. So, you know, that's one of the issues we raised. If one department can say to DPW, no, we don't want it because it's not what we've asked for, why do you then allow yourself to be bullied into a position to take a building? It's then you manage it. Then we should say, do we have the right people in the positions? That's the question we've got to ask. But we will be interested in that need assessment. That must also be with us on Friday. Members, thank you very much. We do not have a meeting tomorrow. We will, when we return, the program... program will be distributed to members for the fourth term before we leave on Thursday, so that members have it. But we're starting off with BRR, and we are first of all seeing again IPED Secretariat, and then the next week the police. IPED Secretariat, CIRA, and then the police. Thank you very much.